Hello, and welcome to Cubicle Confidential, weekly advice for the working stiff. I'm Chris DeSantis, and let me introduce my co-host, starting with eyes, the insightful, the incessantly insistent, and all-around interesting Mary Abajay.
Hey, everybody. Hey, Chris DeSantis. Hello, I am Mary Abajay, and it is my honor to introduce to you my co-host, the illuminating, the illustrative, and the imaginative Mr. Chris DeSantis. Oh.
Those were very nice. I love that. Illuminating.
I know. And I wanted to say illustrative. Oh, I said it right the first time. It's one of those words.
That's a hard word.
It is. Illustrative.
No, that's a hard word. Illustrative. Yeah. The other one I had trouble with recently was illusory.
Illusory?
Illusory. I had trouble saying
that.
Is
it more S-E or more Z? Illusory.
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 Yeah, illusory. The phrase is illusory correlation. There's an illusion that things are correlated with each other. For instance, young people are sensitive to feedback. Well, that's an illusion of correlation.
Oh, interesting. Oh, speaking of young people and being sensitive to stuff, did you know, it was on Wall Street Journal or somewhere today or NPR, that Gen Z doesn't like to see sex scenes in their movies. They're not into the big romance. They prefer seeing movies with friendships.
Huh, that's it. Well, there is an awkwardness. Remember now, they use the term situationships.
Ooh, say more.
A situationship is there. So are you dating her? Well, no, not really. Are you seeing her regularly? No, I don't know. We have a situation. And a situationship is the non-committal aspect where they are part and parcel to somebody they will hang around with, but they are not committal to being the one they're going to hang around with.
Oh my God, I love that. Situationship.
Situationship. They have a situationship going on.
So is there a sensitivity to intimacy? Is it more, or is it just they don't want to share about what they're doing, or are they afraid to get into relationships, or what?
What we're seeing is an extension of adolescence. I think what the phase of going through, again, I don't think they're as sexual. They're not having the frequency of sex. They're marrying much later. So I also think their affinity for swiping and TikTok and all these things. I think that, that these are drawing them in. The distractions offered by these other things are not allowing them to interact as much. They spend hours a day on social media, but they don't spend that time could have been spent meeting other people.
So maybe they're seeing sex in their social media so they don't need to see it in their movies.
Well, I think too, when you bring sex up in the way that it is presented, it's presented as this, these beautiful people engaging in beautiful things. You know what I'm saying? So the reality is a little messier. And by the way, when you are raised, I don't know, this is just the thinking on it, but when you're raised, when you have on Instagram where everything is wonderful and beautiful and curated, and when you actually get into life, it's not.
It's not. Oh, no, it's not. Oh, no,
and who
not.
Wants to be judged on that I'm not wonderful and beautiful in bed, or that I'm, you see what I'm saying? That judgment becomes even scarier still when it's a new territory you're navigating.
So true and so interesting. You know what else people are going to judge us on? Mm. They think that this show is going to be about
Generation Z and sex.
Yeah, and sex. People are thinking, oh my God, they're going to talk about sex. Can we talk about sex, baby? And they're going to be so disappointed when find out we are not.
We're not talking about sex. Also, now nobody's listening.
Everyone's like, click.
Hey, there's a show on sex. Oh no, never mind.
Everyone's going over to TikTok now to see if they can find some sex stuff. So Chris, what are we talking about today?
Well, we're going to show cat videos for the next 30
minutes. I love a good cat video. She lied.
No, today it's should I stay or should I go?
Oh yeah, I forgot to tell you, I'm going to rename the show to be called It's Time to Go.
It's time to go. Oh, so this one's all about really decisions that have to be made about where you are and where you want to be.
I love it.
Good. All right, you ready for this? I know we've talked enough about sex. I don't think there's any sex in these, sadly, people. So,
well, whenever my husband wants sex with me, I always say, you know what, honey? It's time to go.
Hey, isn't that the name of your show?
Exactly. Oh, you know what? There was I know I keep digressing, but there was a story on, I can't remember one of the news stations, about female frogs will play dead to avoid having sex.
That's funny.
And that's all funny. I'm going to say.
That's just funny. Oh,
again, people, it's time to go to the real show because we're not talking about sex today.
Okay. Well, okay. Anyway, yeah, back to the real show. Should I stay or should I go? This one is from Denver. You ready?
Yes.
Hello. I started working at this company almost 45 years ago. Hello. I started working at this company almost 45 years ago in, of all places, the mailroom. I have worked my way up and around the company through the years and now found myself at a crossroads. I can either retire or continue working as a contract employee since I have significant institutional knowledge. I don't need the money, so I could retire, but I don't see myself sitting around. The problem is, I would be reporting to a former direct report who isn't the sharpest tack in the box. If I do stay, any advice on how to tell the powers that be that this project manager shouldn't be managing projects? Signed, a few cards shy of a full deck in Denver.
I okay. love this question so much. Well, quite frankly, I think for me, this is a really, really easy one. Mm-hmm. And here's my answer. If you want the job, take the job, but resist the judgment. So you're going into this job already judging this person, and you may know this person well, you've had a lot of experience, but they've never been your boss. So you don't really know from direct experience what kind of a boss or what this person's like as a manager. He, she, they may surprise you with how they manage you. And you're also coming in as a very senior person, so they may give you a lot of deferential. You could actually end up being this person's mentor. So take the job if you want the job. Take the job if you want to keep working. But if after taking the job, you then discover he is not well suited for his position, then you have some choices that you need to make. One could be do nothing, just let the guy roll on as he's rolling on. Two, you could help him get better. You could become a mentor to him, an advisor. Three, you could tell the management, guys, hey, I've been working with so-and-so for a couple of months now. I don't think he's up for the job. Remembering that you have a lot of experience, they would probably listen to you. Or your fourth is suggest f***ing quit. I mean, at the end of the day, you don't really, it's not a big deal, but don't judge the situation before you go into it. And my last point is you're worried about this, where your big decision would be, do you want to be a contract employee for an organization that you were a leader in? And are you willing to give up the power that you once had if you do that?
Oh, that's good. That's an interesting point, right? No, okay. I think that, by the way, good advice all around. I'm in your camp in this. Were you done, or is it my turn?
I was done.
Oh, I'm done. I know
that was unusually succinct.
I know it was very tight. No, it was good advice. I like this too. I think you shouldn't be talking to the powers be. By the way, let me make a point. 45 years ago, you started in the mailroom, and somebody must have believed in you because the mailroom is not the source of where we get our best and brightest. We don't say, oh, well, let's go down to the mailroom. So somebody saw something and nurtured it. Because in that sense, now you will say, I did this all myself. Nobody does it themselves. They're rewriting the narrative of a history when they think they've risen themselves out of the mailroom. No, somebody took you out of the mailroom. And I keep that in the back of your mind because I think Mary's point is quit judging before you know them, who they are in the role that they are in. And by the way, you know what they need to do to succeed there. You know what it takes to be a good manager. And I think Mary's point is right. Become a mentor. Become a great coach to this person. Give it your best. You know, your legacy shouldn't be about judging another person and eliminating them. Your legacy should be about creating and helping somebody succeed. That was what was given to you. Give it unto another. The other point here is, and I think Mary said this as well, is you're not his boss. So be careful if you do decide to mentor or coach him, don't act like his boss. What you have to do, and my piece of advice for you is, I would step back a little bit and take some courses in coaching and mentoring so that you move from a model of telling somebody to do something to a model of asking. But that's a different model. So this model is really about questions. So why did you make this choice? What were you thinking when you made that choice? Were there other things you considered with that? What are some of the alternatives? What are the consequences of all alternatives? How might that look? Those are all questions. Don't get me wrong. You could sort of take the reins, but you're not teaching him that way. You're taking over. So again, back to the point. You have an opportunity to have a legacy here with somebody who is not up to snuff yet. Now, if they don't make it up to snuff, then, of course, we have something that has to be said, possibly, or I would just step away and take Mary's other advice and see what else is out there in the world for you, but leave him alone.
I likey, me likey. I really like, I liked everything you said, but what I really liked the most was, you know, get some coaching skills, because as you are going into a semi-ish retirement, learning how to be a coach is really helpful. And when Chris and I say coach, we mean a leadership coach. We don't mean like the sports type of coach, because some men have that confused. They think a coach is someone that writes the plays, directs them, tells them what to do, and cheers them on. We're talking about a coach that is an executive coach that is going to enable learning on the other person's behalf by asking them questions and doing exploratory stuff. So I think that's a fantastic idea. And that would probably serve him very well throughout all of his semi-retirement.
Oh, absolutely. Because this guy's a test case. He's a test case. Say, okay, you want to have another, you know, a line of business, as it were, as a senior executive in the marketplace. Well, why don't you learn on somebody else's dime? And that's what you'd be doing with this guy.
I love it. I love it. And some of it's also like as I ended my answers, I really do think he does need to reevaluate or examine his willingness to give up being in charge. Like, he's already like, this guy doesn't work. Well, you know, it's not your fucking problem anymore, dude. Your problem is to do the job you were paid for.
No, it's exactly right. It's exactly right. He's got to let go of some of his ego here.
Yeah, he does. That's true.
No.
All right.
All right. We helped him. Tough love. This was some tough love, buddy.
Tough love for a few cards shy.
Yeah. All right. You ready for the next question?
I am ready, Freddie.
Okay. We're going to California here. Hi, Mary and Chris. Fun show. I'm in HR and I have the unwelcome task of talking to senior partners about retiring. We don't have a formal retirement age, and so some of the partners stay on and on and on. Typically, it has been men who have either been divorced or lost a spouse. There doesn't seem to be a reason to be at home, and their identity is strongly attached to the work. It's like it's all they know. Any suggestions on how to have this discussion? It's not a matter of either you retire or else we let you go. Sadly, it's more about their declining contributions and the angst it causes in the other partners having them around. Signed, a curtain call in California.
Ooh, ouch, ouch, McGoucha.
Ouch, McGoucha, yes.
See, this is why I want to call the episode Time to Go.
Time to Go.
Right. I think that this is going to be a challenge for a lot of different industries and organizations. The Wall Street Journal just ran an article about, you know, the difficulty of retiring because people are living longer and they want to be contributing longer. And so I think that this is something that we're going to see a lot more of. So the first thing I will say on this one is I don't actually think this is an HR problem. I think this is a partner problem.
Yes.
And I think the partners are passing the buck because they don't have the cojones to have these conversations themselves. And I know this sounds kind of heartless on that saying, but like if they're dumping this on you to go have this conversation, maybe you can like coax these people out. They're falling down on their leadership job. And, you know, and the other thing I want to think about before I get to my actual advice is, you know, the law firms, except for the ones who are my clients, the law firms have made these beds and now they have to lie in them, right? Because that whole model is you give us your entire life. You work 80,000 hours a week. You know, we are the most important thing. We'll make you partner for life. So when you do that, then these people, particularly these men that she says, they've given their entire life. So they have nothing to retire to except a pile of money. So, you know, it's all they've known. So I think another reason, this is another reason why law firms or any kind of firms need to rethink this policy or this model. So I would recommend that two things. One, if you are going to have these conversations, then you want to make them, to me, as bland as possible, which is go into the senior partner and say, hey, you know, how are you doing? You know, it's our policy to just remind all people after a certain age that they, you know, what their retirement benefits would be. Here's all the information you need. Let me know if you have any questions. Otherwise, I'll see you next year for the same conversation. You know, something like that, something like that. But really what needs to happen is the law firm needs to create some sort of a policy around this. So maybe it's when someone reaches a traditional retirement age that every year or every 6 months you provide them with a retirement information as an FYI. Or the policy needs to be something around as long as you maintain these levels of productivity or performance or engagement, you stay on as a full partner. Or you can stay on as a partner at this amount of salary, or you create like a new level of partnership, like partner emeritus, and their roles shift into something really different. So I think this is not a HR problem. This is a partner problem, and they need to put on their big boy, girl, and other pants and make some policies.
I think you've said everything I was going to say. In fact, the first thing I thought about is, how is this your problem?
Yeah.
How is this your, because I loved your approach to going in there and saying, okay, on a perfunctory level, I can remind them of where they are and what we're doing.
Like every January or something. Yeah.
Every January, I can certainly do that. But for me to have that conversation with a person who has, there was an author or not an author, there was a woman who won the Nobel Prize recently, and she studies women's issues. And she talked about inequality. I can't think of her name offhand, but I think she's an interesting, I think she's coming out with a book on this. But she looked at what's called greedy jobs. And greedy jobs, by her definition, are jobs that are greedy with your time. Law firms, consulting firms, you know, any high-powered financial services, they take greed, they take your time. And to your point, these are men, to the great degree that she described them as, these are men who have only spent their time doing what they do, and that's all they know how to do.
Yeah.
And so in that sense, they have given their all to this. And so who else are they otherwise? I think, again, to your point, there should be an internal discussion about, and you already said it, a policy. How do we transition them? How do we transition ourselves, not them, ourselves into the next role that we should be taking on? I love your framing of the emeritus. I think there should be sort of an off-ramp, a slow off-ramp, meaning that, look, 100% of your life today has been giving to the business. As you get to this level, 80% is to the business, 20% to the organization. Now it's 50% to the organization, 50% to the business. Now it's 80% of the time to the organization. That means you do mentoring, you do all the things that help us build relationships, all the things. So my point would be, you slowly shift the impetus of their focus. And to your other point, you also make, say, how are they remunerated for what they're doing?
And for those of you who don't know that word, it means, how are you going to pay those bastards?
Exactly. They have to be paid differently, because the angst to some degree is, why are they getting what they're getting when they're not given what we need?
Yeah. I love that idea. And there's so many different ways to rethink and reframe and reconstruct their roles. And I love that idea. And I think every firm that does not have, or any organization that doesn't have a retirement policy, needs to think about that. Like, how are we going to keep people? What are their expectations? Like, I can't imagine going into like a 98-year-old person and saying, like, you didn't bill 80 hours this week. It's hard. But you know what else I was thinking, Chris, and I loved everything you said, was, I'm curious, because our writer didn't say, our HR person didn't say, but what is the angst that is causing the other partners in particular? Because this might be a good place to look at in terms of how you're going to redefine roles. Like, is it because these never going to retire partners are taking up resources? Is it a resource issue? Are they resistant to changes? Or are they buttoned in where they're not wanted? So maybe they have too much like decision-making authority. Are they just out and about the town, just looking old and feeble and giving giving the firm a bad name? Are they not pulling their weight? So I think it would be helpful for them to think about what is the angst, so they can sort of name the problem they're trying to solve.
No, I think that's an interesting point, Mary, but they won't tell you.
Yeah.
Because I think we don't talk about, you know who the invisibles in the United States are? Anyone over 85.
Yeah.
Anyone over 85.
Yeah.
No, we don't, right. we don't engage them. We put them in buildings with others who are like that. You know, we sequester them. We are, you know, and so in that sense, because what they do is they remind us of our mortality and we get slower. We aren't as quick to do these things. We don't do, you know, we do all the things that humans do when they get older, but we don't want to see that.
Yeah.
And I think that's the shame of who we are. And by the way, we are living in a world that is more transactional. And so this idea is, I think to your point, if we honor the people who have worked for us and we engage them in a way that gives them dignity, we are moving away from a transactional model in the sense that, look, we care for who the people are. And so the transition out should have some grace to it.
Oh, I completely agree. But I think in order to have the grace, I think the partners need to like identify what is bothering them besides
yes.
just the being old. Like, you know, like, is it because like, these partners don't understand technology, so they're voting against any technology investments.
Yeah.
You know, like
they'll
I think it's
that.
Important to really understand like where it is, where they're not being helpful and where they could be more helpful.
Yeah, no, I totally get what you're saying on all of those things. I just don't think that they will vocalize a lot of what the needs.
Well,
they won't be as honest as they could be.
Well, we both know lawyers aren't always the most like reflective in terms of things like that, or like
other than the firms that hire us.
Other than the firms that hire us, right? I mean, I do so many workshops on feedback for law firms because it's nothing that something that lawyers are amazing, but there's some things that they tend not to be very good at.
But it's not just lawyers; professionals tend to. Stay closer to what they do in terms versus the interactions they have with people outside of what they do.
Except for consultants who are perfect.
There's also there are programs across the United States now that are offered by some of the fancier schools like, you know, Notre Dame, Stanford, all that. They talk about life transition. And they're meant for people of this ilk who are successful, who are supposed to have retired and know not what to do. And what they do is they put them in small groups of people who are living the same experience, and they work through together who they could become by closing the door on who they were.
Oh, I know. There's so many great programs like that. We have a couple of, here in Washington, D.C. And, you know, the challenge with that, with this law firm is you're like, oh, you're welcome to stay as long as you want, but here's a program you can take, which would be great. I mean, maybe that's what they should do. I don't know.
I think it should be an option for people because I think they're looking for an answer.
Yeah, they definitely
and if we
are.
If we can give them some direction to an answer.
I mean, so many people want to keep working, keep contributing. I totally respect that. So, hey, Chris, just to call attention to your time.
I'm sorry.
We need to move on.
Okay, let's go. One more.
But wait,
one
pan more, to a once. Corner. I think we gave, I'm sorry, curtain call. Wait, where are we? Well,
Curtain call. We did curtain call in California.
Oh.
We gave, yeah.
All right.
Now we're going to one more. We got to go to Houston.
Okay.
Houston. Come in, Houston. Ready?
I'm ready.
Dear Cubies, my father started our paint business nearly 53 years ago, and it has grown into a seven-store chain. It is now being run by second and third generation family members, but my father still comes in every day. I'm fine with it, but some of my cousins aren't. If he doesn't like what's going on in the store with merchandising, marketing, inventory, you name it, he'll grab some employees and have them do things the way he thinks it should be done. They don't know who to listen to. I'm supposed to talk to him about it, but it's still his business. Any advice on how I can get him to see things differently? Signed, Painted in a Corner in Houston.
Ah, clever, Painted. You know, when you read this question, mm-hmm. the first thing I thought of was that amazing show that I used to love to watch. And I don't think it's on anymore. It was called The Prophet with this guy named Marcus Leonis. And he would take businesses that had sticky situations like this or were failing. This business isn't failing. And he would fix them. He would help them fix them. And I think this is a Marcus Leonis question. So, if I had a bigger Rolodex, I would invite Marcus Leonis on this show. but we don't because we're nobodies. and this, of course, is even more challenging because it's a family business.
Yes.
So there's a lot at stake. And I love it when we get family business questions. So, of course, this is a delicate situation and one that is probably more common in family businesses than not. And, you know, I think that we need to applaud the fact that they are in the third generation in this business, because what is it? Most small businesses, Chris, only make it through the second generation.
Yeah, right.
So, yeah. So I think, first of all, congratulations. All right. So yes, you know, you are going to need to talk to your dad. It's got to happen. Got to happen, my friend. So one of the things I think you want to reflect on is, are you keeping your dad in the loop enough about changes that you all are making in terms of, I don't know, processes or procedures or protocols?
Oh, good. Right.
Right. Because if he's not in the loop, then he's going to walk in his store and say, why the hell are your kids doing it this way? Right. So make sure that you are keeping him in the loop. You want to make sure that you're getting some buy-in from him, or at least some commitment to let you experiment with new ways. Don't let him be surprised, because he seems to have a penchant for coming in. So you'd be better off if you're making sure you really are keeping him in the loop. So if you're going to have this conversation with your dad, you do want, of course, start it with a lot of appreciation, a lot of honoring about like what an amazing business it is, how honored you are to be in the next generation, how much you want to maintain his legacy, blah, 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 blah. And then I would say, probably say, you know, we want your input. We love that you can come to the stores. We love that you are our, you know, eyes on the ground. And there are times when you are giving contradictory information or instructions to our employees. And this is causing them some stress and some angst and a little bit of disengagement. So I'm thinking that we probably haven't kept you in the loop enough to tell you about the new things we are doing, or the kind of the procedures or protocols that we are changing. And that's where I would then make sure that he's aware of it. Talk with him on a regular basis around what's changing, the new things that are coming your way. Again, get his buy-in. If you can't get his buy-in, get his willingness to support a quote unquote experiment. And then, you know, finally, you want to come to some agreement around what he should do if he walks into a store and he doesn't like what he sees. Maybe it's call you, maybe it's take a note, maybe it's ask the employee some questions, but be clear about like what would be most helpful when he sees things he doesn't like. And if none of that works, call Marcus Leonis.
I think that's really good advice all around. This was a tough question because, again, it is a family. It is a family. So I remember when I was young, we had a similar situation in my world. My grandfather started a beer business back in the 30s. My father was a part of it, and then he went back to medical school, but my uncle stayed with it. And my uncle Gene then grew the business, and then he grew it big enough to where they had another location, and they grew, but my grandfather stayed. Gene's son and his daughter, Debbie and Gigi, they both worked in the business, and then they had other cousins who worked in the business, or relatives in the business as well. My grandfather would come in every day. He was irritating to them in the sense that he would interfere and he would, you know, give people beers and, oh, no, this guy's a regular, get him a case of that, give him a case, you know, old Italian thing.
Yeah.
And so he would just spend the day, you know, and talking.
Old Italian
around.
Mafia thing, but keep going.
Yeah. But he was kind of that guy. And so he would do all of those things, and they went to their father, who was Gene, and they said, well, you got to get him out of there. And then Gene had a stern talk, my uncle, with my grandfather, who then left, and he never got over it.
Oh, see.
It was very sad because this was his thing.
Yeah.
It was the thing. And so that's why.
But Gene also didn't have you to help coach him on this conversation.
No, he did not have me on this. And they, you know, so, and he, and by the way, he needed his kids to do this. And his kids were going, look, I can't do this with him doing that. So, and they didn't talk to each other. It was just so, it just didn't play well.
So we want to avoid that with Painted.
Yes, yeah. And my thought was, so in my thing, I think you can handle this I don't know how to handle it in the best way, but I think you have to think lovingly and saying, look, Dad, you own all of these stores. We are not here if it was not for you. But now we are 7 stores. And Dad, then I would say, this guy's worked there for 53 years. I would try to come up with stories, because this his son works for him and he knows this. Where were stories where somebody in one of the stores broke the chain of command? Where were stories where there were times where somebody moved from, okay, in one store we could do this. Now that we have three and somebody says, I'm going to do it this way. No, I don't feel like doing it that way. And it screwed things up. My point would be, start telling stories of screw-ups because people didn't follow the chain of command. And you're saying to him, look, they will always follow you because you are the commander, but you are still breaking the chain of command relative to who they should be reporting to. I don't know what to do here because I'm dealing with you who I respect and love. At the same time, we're also dealing with employees who should be following the chain of command. Help me understand what to do. So you make him part of the solution because he is part of the problem as well, but he doesn't see himself as a problem. He sees himself more as the guide. But my point here is if you can sort of expand his, what's the thing on a camera when you expand?
The lens, the aperture?
The aperture. If you can expand his aperture of what he's seeing, the larger picture here, he becomes part of this problem solver. And then he might say, well, you know what I need to do? Maybe I should check with the store manager before I tell them to change the display. Or maybe I should check with... So my point would be is you have the right to do that, Dad. So maybe if you did that, we'd stay within the frame of the command, but you get the final say.
Yeah. Anyway. He gets the final say, the dad.
Well, I mean, you could say you get the final say, but again, you know what you're doing here, Dad, because we all know that, look, this we operate well because we follow what we should be doing because that's what you taught us to do.
Yeah. Oh, that's nice. Yeah, so I think our answers are both really in alignment. You're going to have to come at this with love and honor, and then you're going to have to discuss why it's a problem. Not that it's his fault, but it's a challenge for our employees. And let's together decide how we're going to handle these things when you see something you don't like.
Exactly. So show him the larger picture of the problem and then how do we solve it?
I love it. See, we just made it seem we just made it seem so easy.
We do. We don't need what's his name, Marcus. Marcus.
We don't need Marcus Leonis. But Marcus, if you want to restart your show, Chris and I are available. and you know what our listeners are thinking right now? It's time to go, which is what I'm renaming this episode, Chris DeSantis, because all of these were other people telling other people it's time to go.
Time to go. That's true. That is true. That is what they are.
All right. So thank you for joining us today. Big thanks to our amazing, overworked, underpaid producer, who we hope never goes, Mr. Jack Edinger. If you have a workplace question or a cubicle dilemma, give us a shout. No questions too easy, no questions too hard. Lots of ways to reach us. You could email us to info@cubicleconfidential.com, tweet us at @cubicleconfide1, or find us on LinkedIn, Chris DeSantis or Mary Abajay or Cubicle Confidential. People, we are easy to find. And until we see you next week, we hope you work hard, be kind, please don't go away from us. And if you can't,
call us.
All right. See you next week.